back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here, high above downtown Chicago. And we are here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. My next guest is a good friend of the show's and mine, and one of my heroes. Don Coscarelli is a filmmaker who has made some great movies, including the classic Phantasm, which regular listeners to this show know how much I love that movie. Saw it over 100 times in the theater when it came out in 1979. Just screened it recently at my Nick DiGilio Film Club. And he's also made some amazing, great films. Right now, though, we've had him on the show many times, and, you know, any time to have Don on the show is a good time. But he's written a new book, and it's a terrific book. It's called True Indie, Life and Death in Filmmaking. It's out right now. If you want to read a book about what it's like to really be an independent filmmaker and how crazy some of the stuff is and the struggles and the stories and the interesting behind-the-scenes stuff about filmmaking, this is a tremendous book, a great book about filmmaking. And you can get a book and get it signed on Monday, October 8th at the Music Box Theater. It starts at 7:15, and Don's going to be there. Don will be there, and he's going to talk about the book, do book signings. Books will be available to buy there, and they are going to screen with Bubba Hotep. And there you go. So let's welcome Don back to the show. Don, how are you, sir?
Nick, I'm doing great.
Good.
It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
It's always a pleasure to have you on my show, Don. You know that. Hey, congratulations on the book.
Hey, thank you so much. You know, I genuinely appreciate it because it's my first effort at writing something 300-some pages in length. And that's nice to hear that you like it. That's really wonderful to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't. I'll be honest with you, Don, I haven't finished it yet. But I just got it like a couple of days ago, so I've been ripping through it, and I really, really love it. And there's so many great stories in here. And when did you come up with the idea to write the book?
Well, you know, I always wanted to do some kind of fiction. You know, I wanted to do some kind of writing to try it out. I've done a lot of writing and screenplays, but never really tried, you know, that. And I was thinking of trying to do something narrative. But, the publisher I was friendly with, they had done the David Wong, John Dies at the End books, and also, you know, had made a huge amount of money off of Bruce Campbell memoirs.
Yeah.
And so they suggested, oh, why don't you write a memoir? And I started thinking about all the, you know, because I've been telling these stories to aspiring filmmakers for all these years, and I thought, geez, I could put that down. And I started putting it together, and you know, I try to do it from a perspective of, you know, for somebody who had interest in how these movies were made or how to possibly break into the business, to try to let them learn from my mistakes.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's a success.
Yeah. Well, it's really something because, like, you really are one of the few really independent filmmakers that are out there. I mean, it's not like you haven't had struggles with the powers that be over the years. But I mean, this is, you are truly the definition of an independent filmmaker. Is that something that you're proud of, obviously?
Hey, Nick, I've been trying to sell out for years. Just kidding. No, listen, I found my own peculiar little niche. You know, it's very strange because, I had a few very, not the greatest business skills, but I had some. And I also found, I learned how to make, you know, I realized that if I could figure out a way to make movies on a reasonably tight budget, there might be an excellent chance of making a profit and at the same time make the movies that I wanted to make.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of it was that attempt to do that. And over the years I think I perfected it. Although, like I said, man, have I made some mistakes and gotten in bed with the wrong people.
Yeah.
And all of that. But I think my errors might be instructive to other people.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And also, you have made the movies that you wanted to make. Like you set out, I mean, I know your sensibility as a filmmaker. And whenever I see one of your movies, when it's over, I'm like, yeah, Don got to make that movie. That's his voice. It's a very distinctive voice. It's a very distinctive voice that you have.
Yeah, listen, I have some odd taste, I guess. But look, I somehow try to find a way. You know, the other thing was is that you know, I had all this success originally with Phantasm. I was, you know, pretty young, in my mid-20s when that happened. And you can see with some of my confederates and, you know, colleagues in the independent horror movie world, boy, you have a little success, you are just stuck and pigeonholed, and the only way you can get money funded is if you make another horror film. Yeah. And so, I, you know, I've tried to get funding for other, I have other tastes or whatever, but, you know, just had a lot of difficulty. So what I did instead was I kept making what are called horror films, but I tried to do something a little different, you know, and tried to, you know, do one about a, you know, 4,000-year-old mummy
right.
in a rest home, which old aging Elvis is battling. And then what John dies at the end, it's about, you know, obviously this very strange interdimensional street drug that people are taking, and they're not coming back the same once they go on these trips. And so, you know, they have horrific elements, but I can, you know, push the envelope a little and go into some interesting different places.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Bubba Hotep, which they are screening on Monday night at the Music Box. And Music Box is just a beautiful theater, too. I got to introduce Phantasm Remastered when it premiered at the Music Box a couple of years ago. And it's a beautiful place to watch movies. And I think you're going to have a great time.
It really is. Yeah. Thank God they're preserving it and keeping it going.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is that you got to have these movie palaces. You can't let them go, because how else are you going to get people off their couch from their inexpensive big screen TVs watching Netflix all night long?
Yeah.
You know, you need something, you know, big and grand like that. And it's where, you know, where it's really an experience to go out and see a movie.
Yeah, it is. And and you'll be there, and people can get the book and you'll sign it. It's $40 with the book,
yes,
plus the film screening, and it's $10 for just the film screening only. And if you've not seen Bubba Hotep, people, you need to see it. a wildly original movie that we were early on that one, Don, because
you and Mike Kurz were right there at the start, because Mike had invited Bruce Campbell out to his convention, and you guys screened it there, and that was certainly the first Chicago, might have been the first screening east of the Mississippi, for sure.
And you know, and that was the very first Flashback convention, and you know, that's how long ago it was.
You're kidding.
There was the very first Flashback convention. Yeah.
I still got the photos that Mike sent, and you might be in some of them, with those dioramas with the mummy that they had set up and a whole Egyptian crypt that they built. It was quite beautiful.
They did a great job, we saw the movie, and it was at the Pickwick Theater in Park Ridge at the time, nice big movie theater, and I was blown away by it. I just thought it was so original and so weird and so funny. It's a great movie, and people really are going to have a great time seeing it on Monday night.
Oh yeah, no, it's good. We just had a screening here at Beyond Fest in L.A. last night at the Egyptian Theater on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah, here you go.
Yeah, we got a full house, and man, that movie still plays after 15 some years.
Yeah.
It was really satisfying.
Yeah, it's a terrific movie. Well, listen, let's start at the beginning. When did you start to want to be a filmmaker? When was it always something that was in the back of your mind?
Well. Probably the night I went up and saw 2001 A Space Odyssey. It was the first time I really appreciated, you know, between that and Goldfinger, those were, I always say, the two formative movies, because that was the first James Bond movie, I thought, and I loved the action sequences in that, and also the, you know, kind of, there's some transgressive violence in that Goldfinger.
Yeah.
Remember when they crushed the Lincoln Continental with the guy in it, you know, in the crusher. That was pretty. And then, of course, you've got Oddjob with his hat that he, you know, chops women's necks with.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy stuff. But that, and then I saw 2001, and it was like, you know, it's like an art film, and you really see that there's more to it. And those things really got me going. And, you know, my parents had a little camera, and I started, you know, experimenting with a neighborhood pack of friends, and made westerns and spy thrillers and all kinds of things. And then I got this crazy idea in my head that I could really actually one day make feature films.
Mm-hmm.
And which, you know, one of the, and this is one of the things that spurred me to come back and tell the story in the book, because it was really like the Cinderella story, because my father had a good year in the stock market. Mm-hmm. And so my neighborhood friend and I, like, sat him down and just browbeat him and tell him, we need you to you need to invest in a movie, $25,000. And he agreed. It was amazing. And so we started shooting this movie. It was completely out of control. So my dad would call up the local L.A. Times, Los Angeles Times film critic, back when film critics would pick up their phones.
Yeah.
And this film critic, super cool guy, and he would just say, oh, yeah, well, when the boys are done with the movie, I'll take a look. Maybe I can give you some idea. So we screened the movie for him. And, you know, he seemed to like it, but wasn't knocked out. But like a week later, he calls up and he says, oh, I had lunch with the president of Universal Pictures. I told him about your movie, and you've got to get the film over. He wants to watch it. And we sent we took our film over there. He watched it, and they made an offer, and my dad freaking got multiples of his investment back, and all the actors got paid, and it was just like a Cinderella story, because my neighborhood friend, we were 19 years old, we got our own office on the Universal lot.
How about that?
In Universal City, California, to do the post-production on the film. And it was like, we went immediately from the lowest you can go to almost the highest you can go in like a period of about 1 year. It was amazing.
Yeah. Wow.
And as I say in the book, personally, we finished the movie. It turned out nicely, but it didn't gross. And so, you know, they told us not to let the door hit us on the way out.
Right.
And I've never had an office on a studio lot since.
You know, that is such an incredible story. And there's so many incredible stories in the book. And now, but you know, one of the other things that I really like about you, Don, is that you're very loyal to the people that you work with. I mean, you know, Jim the World's Greatest, you continued to work with, you know, at least two of the cast members of that throughout your entire career. And then the same thing with Kenny and Company. You know, you have these stock guys. Angus Grimm was in your first movie.
Yes, he was. He was the first adult actor I ever directed, and it was funny because I co-directed it with my neighborhood friend Craig Mitchell, and boy, it would drive Angus crazy because, you know, like I'd go up to him after a take and say, "Oh, that's a little big. Bring the performance down." And I'd walk back to the camera, and I didn't know Craig was walking over. He'd go, "You know, bring it up. It's just too subtle." And we'd give him conflicting, you know, and Angus just would like. And that's, I think, where now we should explain to the audience, now, Angus is the star of the Phantasm films, or
yes.
He was, and
yes.
Dearly departed, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But he had this towering, commanding presence as a classic horror star, but I think he really perfected that raised eyebrow glare that he used in Phantasm when he would like look at us when we give him that conflicting direction on
so
the
that,
set.
So that's where it came
Funny.
From, huh? That's where it came from.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don, hang on a second, okay, Don?
Yeah, sure.
All right,
sure.
We got to take a break. There's Don Coscarelli is with us, a great filmmaker, director of Phantasm and Bubba Hotep, Beastmaster, John Dies at the End. He's got a new book out. It's called True Indie, Life and Death in Filmmaking. You can get a copy of the book, have it signed at the Music Box Theater Monday night, October 8th, and then stay for a screening of Bubba Hotep. More with Don Coscarelli coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. And my guest right now is Don Coscarelli, the creator of Phantasm and so many other terrific movies. He is now an author. His book is called True Indie, Life and Death in Filmmaking, and it's all about his adventures in making movies and telling great stories. And he will be here in town at the Music Box Theater on Monday night, October 8th. Starts at 7:15. You can get a book, have it signed. He's going to talk to everybody, and then they're going to screen Bubba Hotep. You can get information at musicbox.com, musicboxtheater.com. You can also check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. So let's welcome Don back to the show. Welcome back, Don.
Hey, Nick, great to be on your show.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. So some of the other stories in here, there's one that involves Catherine Keener. Let's talk a little bit about that, because she's, you know, obviously now become like this really amazing actress that people know from 40-Year-Old Virgin and so many other things, and she's in Jim Carrey's new show, Kidding, right now, and she's great on that. But you cast her in the first time in one of her first roles, right?
Yeah, I think it may have been her first role. I think she had one little walk-on the show, but this was a real, you know, she was like the co-star of the movie with Lance Henriksen, and she actually met her future husband, Dermot Mulroney, was also on there.
Wow.
And, Mark Ralston, another great actor. As I tell in the book, we almost killed her.
Yeah.
It was horrible. We were shooting a water sequence. It was a river rapids, and this backpacking adventure I made called Survival Quest.
Right.
And so we had this wilderness survival school, and this river, the only river we have near Southern California, is called the Kern River. And it wasn't until we were well into shooting that I learned that its nickname was the Killer Kern. And then I heard this other really morbid story, Nick, where, you know, it's a dam-controlled river, if they shut it down up at the dam, it just goes almost dry. And every year at the end of the season, they shut the river down, and then the coroners go down and they usually pull three or four bodies out of the river,
and
then people drown there. It's really dangerous. And so this is where we were filming, and there's a scene where the Survival Quest team members are trying to escape from some bad guys, and so they throw their backpacks and they jump off a cliff into the river and they're carried down the rapids. So that's basically the scene we're going to shoot, right? So we take all the backpacks and the prop guys put a flotation foam rubber in so that the backpacks will float. But somebody didn't get to her backpack.
Oh my God.
And it had these rock climbing ropes that just absorb water, and the thing got heavy and started to sink. And it was like my last directions. I said, and she's a method actor. And I said to her, Catherine, whatever you do, don't lose the backpack. Hang on to it. So everybody jumps in the river. They're kind of riding their backpacks down the rapids, and they're all doing great, and hers is starting to sink. And she's just trying to keep her head above water and going in there. And luckily, the raft, we had some raft safety guys down beyond the camera. But to me, it looked like great acting. You know, so I thought she was just doing her method thing. But we did. We got her out, and she survived, thrived, and went on to a quite illustrious career.
Absolutely.
So just some great movies.
It's a great story, yeah. Too. You know, what's interesting about this is that, you know, that's not the only person that was in danger. You were in danger quite a bit during the makings of these movies. I mean, you open up the book with a story about you trying to get giving Bill Thornberry an actual shotgun, having him pop out of the CUDA and shoot it, and that's how you open the book. Well, it's like a monstrous action sequence. You almost got killed.
Well, Nick, I always thought that blanks, you know, when you put a blank round in a gun,
right,
they're safe. Well, they're not.
No.
Because they make a big bang, they've got gunpowder, and they shoot a lot of flaming wadding and other debris at a very high muzzle velocity,
yeah,
too, so you can't get too close. But, you know, we were, you know, the scene intimately, having seen it 100 times in the theaters, Nick, which I'm still in awe of. Yeah, Phantasm. We're in that black muscle car, 1971 Plymouth Barracuda, and Bill Thornberry pops up through the sunroof with this pump shotgun, and we had 4 blank shells in there, and he needs to shoot at me because I want to get him shooting towards camera. So I'm in the trunk carrying this big camera, and we're racing down the road, and Bill pops up. He's just like an action star, you know, boom, boom, he's just shooting, and I can see this beautiful muzzle flash going right by camera. Look, epic, you know, and then, you know, got the shot cut, and then camera pulls over, and I had put like this camera pad on my face just in case something came, with some aluminum foil wrapped around it,
right.
And we had this one of our best, our stuntman and driver, his name was George. He was like a hardcore surfer. He just jumps out, comes running over to help me with the camera, and he goes, "Dude, you're face is on fire." And they had to tear this thing off, and luckily I felt the heat, but it didn't really get to me.
Yeah.
But you know, a lot of that was just total inexperience. Thank God nobody was seriously injured on any of those. I take my safety much more seriously.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously now, because I know on some films these kind of things go wrong, and it's horrible.
Now, it took a long time. It took a long time to make Phantasm. You shot it over the course of a couple of years at least, correct?
It was a full year, and then editing took a year, so it was about a 2-year process. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But you know, that was the trick, and that is something that I, you know, tried. My wisdom I'm trying to impart in the book to aspiring filmmakers is that, you know, when you make a film like this, you have to be so careful about how it's scheduled, and you always need to build in some kind, squirrel away money so you can come back and get what we call pickup shots.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times a scene doesn't get shot right, it doesn't play that well, but boy, you see it in the editing room, if you can come back 2 or 3 weeks later and shoot like one little close-up or get a shot of the actor looking in this direction or something, you can really make the scene sing. And so that was one of the things I learned and tried to impart, you know, along with, you know, some of my, you know, suggestions is, you know, how one can break into the movie business if one wants to.
You know, the interesting thing about the way that you made Phantasm, what I find fascinating about it is that you shot a lot of footage, and you know, the movie's 90 minutes long, but you guys shot a ton of stuff, right?
Really did. It was a long script, and we shot it all. A lot of it, though, was, you know, character development. Now, somebody like you would probably love to see the 3-hour version.
Oh my God!
I'm not sure the average moviegoer would enjoy it.
Are you kidding me?
Anybody who was a Phantasm would. So I think that's something that's sort of on my list one day when I, you know, I don't know, when I somehow found some time, would be to try to reconstruct some of that material, even if it was just something like as a bonus feature on a Blu-ray.
I would be thrilled, obviously. But I'll tell you what. I'll tell you something, Don. I freaked out when I saw Oblivion because you used a bunch of footage that was clearly shot for Phantasm and you put it in Oblivion, and I felt like it was a gift. I was like, oh my God, I was so happy that there was like all this footage that you didn't use in Phantasm that you put into Oblivion and did really well. And I love seeing that stuff.
Wow, that is so cool to hear that. Yeah, see, that was in Oblivion, just to bring the audience up to speed. That was the fourth Phantasm, and I'd started to run out of money at that time as to how to make a fourth Phantasm on a reasonable budget. And I had just coincidentally gotten a phone call from the MGM lab, and they were unfortunately closing down. And they said, "We have these cans of film of yours here." And I went over and picked them up, and they were all those outtakes and lifts from the previous versions of it. Mm-hmm. And I held on to it over the years. And I thought, well, I could take some of these scenes and write them into Phantasm Part 4.
Yeah.
And, yeah, of course, it's a budget-saving move, but it's also interestingly bizarre because you have scenes where you got Michael Baldwin playing scenes at age 12 and then, you know, playing them at age 40.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like that, you don't see that too often.
No, you don't. I was thrilled with that. Don, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Don Coscarelli is with us, and we'll take a break and come back and talk more with Don. His book is called True Indie: Life and Death in Filmmaking, a really terrific book about the world of independent filmmaking and making movies in general. You can get your book and get it signed on Monday night, October 8th at the Music Box Theater at 7:15, followed by a screening of The Great Bubba Ho-Tep. We'll talk more with Don right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6. My guest right now is Don Coscarelli, creator of Phantasm and so many other terrific movies. He is also the author of a terrific new book called True Indie: Life and Death in Filmmaking, and he will be here in Chicago at the beautiful Music Box Theater on Monday night, October 8th, 7:15. You can get a book. He'll sign it. He's going to talk. o'clock, and there's going to be a screening of The Great Bubba Hotep. So let's welcome Don back to the show. Don, welcome back.
Glad to be here, Nick, always.
And congratulations. Seriously, I just simply I want to say congratulations on the book. It's quite a beautiful thing. By the way, who did the artwork on the cover and the back cover?
Oh, isn't that amazing?
It's awesome.
That's a guy named Rob Grom is his name, and he actually works. His day job is he does all the books over at St. Martin's Press, but this one he just went to town on.
Oh.
And he had done a terrific cover for David Wong's John Dies at the End, and I was talking with the editor, and I said, well, couldn't we get the guy who did the, let's do something weird, you know, and so he just took elements from my movies and made this just gorgeous work, I thought.
And, it's beautiful.
And strangely bizarre.
It is. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's fantastic. It really is. Kudos to him for doing such a beautiful job. Now, let's talk a little bit now. Since they're screening Bubba Hotep, and we were on top of that one in 2002, but it was an interesting.
Wow.
It was 2002. That's when we screened it. That's when they screened it at Flashback, and I had you on and Bruce on to talk about it. That was the first time you and I ever talked. Was in 2002.
It was.
Yeah.
Well, Nick, you've got great instincts. What can I say? It's amazing. I mean, obviously, look, you sniffed out Phantasm at the beginning, too, so you've got, your movies.
I have to say, what's really funny is we've talked about this before, Don, but one of the trying things about seeing Phantasm as many times as I did in the theater was I had to sit through Prophecy a lot. Because it was
yes.
Because it was a double feature. It was double feature with Prophecy a bunch of times, and so I would go see Phantasm, and I'd want to see Phantasm twice, so I'd have to sit through Prophecy, which is a terrible movie.
If I'm not mistaken, the second issue of Fangoria magazine, they were going to cover Phantasm, but they didn't put Phantasm on the cover. They put Prophecy on the cover.
Yep.
But I think it was bad because it was that big. Bloody bear head.
Yeah.
It looks so ridiculous.
Yeah.
It didn't do them any favors.
It didn't. But shockingly, though, directed by John Frankenheimer, who was a tremendous filmmaker. And but anyway, I saw that movie way too many times, more than I should have, just so I could sit through Phantasm again. So,
that's amazing.
Now, Bubba Hotep was interesting on how you got that movie, how you released it. Talk a little bit, because you did it in a very unusual, very, very independent way for Bubba Hotep.
Well, yeah, well, we went to all the film festivals. We'd had great screenings, like the one in Chicago that you got, Mike hosted.
Yep.
And, we knew that the movie played, but the distributors just didn't get it. It was so incredibly frustrating.
Yeah.
What can you do? And then as Bruce Campbell liked to say pithily, Bubba Hotep was a movie that wasn't released, it escaped. And I think he's right on there because, what happened was is that I met a guy who's an independent booker. His name's David Schultz, and he had gone to a big screening we had here in Los Angeles, and he said, you can make some money with this. I can start booking it into theaters if you can come up with a little investment and, help me with it. And so I basically stopped making movies for 6 months and became a film distributor.
Yeah.
And thank God he was right. It did great.
But it was, what was that experience like to be a distributor, like independently distributing your own movie? Was that an adventure in and of its own?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's a tremendous amount of grunt labor because back then we were, the film was, the format was film,
right.
those film cans, like 50 pounds. And we had like 35 prints, and every day, you'd have to decide which runs were ending and which ones were starting and try to allocate where the prints are going and, load them in the car and drive over to FedEx and DHL and ship them off. And it was an exciting time, though, because the other thing that was really cool is that we had access to a fan base of Phantasm fans and Evil Dead fans.
Yep.
And we put them to work helping us distribute. My son was in charge of it. This was before social media had really caught on yet. I think it was like MySpace was just starting back then.
Yep.
And he would get people to volunteer to be street team leaders in each city. And then we'd start by sending them like a small little kit of like Bubba Hotep swag, like a poster and a couple of flyers. And then if they put them up, and then they'd send us back pictures and go, oh, this is a good person. We'd send them a big box of them. And then they would go around and just do street level marketing for us. And, you know, and then send them signed posters and, you know, invite them to the premieres. And, you know, they became kind of partners. It was great.
It's so great. I mean, that's
helping. It was great.
That's such a grassroots thing, man. I mean, you know, just that is such a great story. And you know, and the movie is so good. I remember when it officially opened here, because when they screened it at Flashback, it didn't have distribution or anything yet, and it was a year later when it finally showed up here in Chicago, and me and Eric Childress split the duties hosting the screenings along with Bruce. Bruce came to town. It was at the Landmark Century Cinema, and there were four theaters that were showing it at different times, and we would introduce it, it was a great night.
We were sophisticated by that time, because anytime Bruce would go to a screening, it would sell out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we couldn't make him stay there for 6 hours, but it was easily to, especially because the theater owners are all, you know, just like everyone, they're greedy and they want to make a lot of money. So they were happy to stagger the screening. So like he would introduce, screening number one, just as the one in number two was ending, he'd go across the hall and do a Q&A, they'd load up the other theater, he'd go back in, and then you guys were tag teaming on the introduction.
Yep. It was an amazing night, and there were so many people there, and, you know, Bruce works the room. Nobody can do a Q&A like Bruce. I mean, you know...
He's a brilliant actor, but he's also a brilliant comic and comedian.
Yeah, you know, he's so good.
Any Evil Dead fan knows, and it's starting, you know, nowadays, I mean, a lot of people, you know of him, but I mean, he really, they should have given him Johnny Carson's chair or something like that. He could have done it, I think.
Yeah, he's great. And it was, that night was really special, because, you know, I got to, like, hang out with Bruce, and we were introducing things that were in the event. And then there was an hour and a half between the last screening. They were going to do a midnight screening, and Bruce was going to introduce that one. And so, I'll never forget this. I can't remember the name of the bar on the corner where we were on Clark and just, like, two blocks away. We went to a bar, and the place was packed. And everybody recognized him, and there were people who were, you know, who had just seen the movie. Bruce was buying drinks for everybody. We were having tequila shots. it was incredible. And then we went back, and I introduced him at the midnight showing. It was a great night, and a lot of people saw it that night, and you know, obviously loved it. It's such a great movie, and it's going to be so great to see it again on the big screen on Monday at the Music Box. It's just going to be fantastic.
Yeah, really excited to be there. Yeah. You know, Chicago's a great city.
Yeah.
I wish I'd learned about Chicago earlier in my life. The first time I ever came was when you and Mike brought me out to Flashback.
Oh, is that right?
Then I realized
Wow.
It's my first time.
Yeah.
But,
you know, you guys have all come out. You know, it was great. 2008, you guys came out, and that's when I got to meet all of you guys for the first time. And then 2014, you guys came out. And you know, I feel like I'm part of the Phantasm family, and, you know, I'm actually...
Well, Nick, you are. You're memorialized in all the DVDs.
I know.
The interviews from those.
I know, and I'm so thrilled.
You are part of the Phantasm family.
Well, listen, Don, it's always a pleasure. I'll be there Monday, obviously, and I'll see you Monday. And I'll be at the Music
Box.
Oh,
great. Fantastic.
Absolutely.
Oh, so exciting.
I wouldn't miss it for the world. So I'll be there on Monday. And we had a lot of fun watching Phantasm with my film club the other night. And that's the Phantasm remastered version, where the first, and I told this story on, the first time I saw the movie, or the first time I saw remastered, you and your wife were sitting next to me, which is, you know, insane. And so when the movie started, and, you know, you had the Bad Robot logo, the Sphere Bad Robot logo, which is so cool.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And then the Avco Embassy logo came up, and I gasped.
Yes.
and you laughed because you knew that, you know, because the Avco Embassy logo had been missing, you know, and when I saw it, I went, like, I couldn't believe
that
it.
That was a seminal part of your youth.
Yes,
I knew
it
that
was.
Because that logo was, it's kind of a silly logo, but it's kind of cool. And the way that it was remastered, it's just freaking gorgeous in that
And it preceded so many of my favorite movies, you know, like The Fog and Escape from New York and Prom Night and all the, and Phantasm, that I just seeing that logo, I went, oh my God, I already loved remastered. So, but anyway, Don, the book is great. And I hope everybody gets it. It's called True Indie: Life and Death in Filmmaking. If you're interested in filmmaking at all, it's a great book about that. If you're a fan of the Phantasm universe and Coscarelli's work, incredible stories in it. And the Music Box event is Monday night, October 8th at the Music Box, 7:15. Don will be there signing books, and they're going to show Bubba Hotep. Don, always a pleasure. You're the best, and I'll see you on Monday.
I return the compliment. Thank you, Nick. Okay. Have a great evening, and I'll see you there.
Okay, take care, buddy.
Take care.
Don Coscarelli, everybody. Yeah, and the book is great. True Indie: Life and Death in Filmmaking. You don't really have to be a crazy Phantasm fan like me. Or a huge, you know, fan of Don Coscarelli's work. If you're just interested in directing filmmaking, if you're interested in stories about independent filmmaking, this is a tremendously awesome book. Get a book, get it signed on Monday night, and we'll see you at the Music Box for Bubba Hotep Monday night at 7:15. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back after this on 720 WGN.